Nightlife with Philip Clark
on ABC Radio.
Joining us for a look this week at Business and Finance News is the ABC's business editor, Ian Verrender. Ian, good evening. Welcome to Nightlife.
Evening, Phil. Good to be here.
Well, the fallout in the world banking system continues. We spoke last time about the Silicon Valley Bank, in which you very ably explained the circumstances of the collapse of that and, well, the other smaller banks that followed the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank. That whole crisis is not yet over, but it's been, in a sense, overtaken in the news by a much bigger fish, the collapse of Credit Suisse. You know, a huge name in world banking, Swiss Bank, has been taken over at a hugely discounted rate to avoid collapse by UBS, a bank which itself has been bailed out.
Yep, its rival bank. And I think Credit Suisse, what a history of about 167 years, you know, so an institution. And this is the way we
about see, as solid as it gets, surely.
Yeah, this is the way we look at all our big financial institutions, that they're rock solid, and except they never really are they? And that's right. You know, UBS was bailed out during the global financial crisis. Mm-hmm. It was
who bailed him out?
I think it was the Swiss government.
Oh, the Swiss government, yeah.
So, you know, again, now the Swiss government is orchestrating a bailout of Credit Suisse and using UBS to do so. It's, you know, UBS.
Why has Credit Suisse gone bust?
Oh, look, it's been a slow moving train wreck, you know, for at least a decade. Why has it gone bust? It's made hugely, incredibly bad investment decisions. It invested in Greensill. Do you remember Greensill?
Oh, yeah.
The boy from North Queensland.
North Queensland. Yeah. Yeah.
So it was one of his big financiers. It lost a lot of money there. There was another major investment loss that they made. They reported record losses of about $5 billion a couple of years ago. Since then, they've been involved in an ongoing series of scandals. There's a corruption scandal in Mozambique. I think there's a drug and money laundering scandal in Bulgaria. It just goes from one disaster to another, and essentially everybody's lost, you know, lost faith in their ability to make a buck on their, you know, investment banking opportunities, and B, just be involved in really nasty scandals. Plus, they were, you know, suffered huge fines during the financial crisis for poor behaviour as well. So it's just never really managed to recover from the financial crisis, and it was always in trouble. Mm. What's the catalyst for this latest debacle, though, has been what's gone on in America with Silicon Valley Bank, Signature Bank, and of course there's another bank that's on the ropes as well, called New Republic. First Republic, sorry.
Yeah, okay. Man, a lot of people have lost a lot of money in Credit Suisse. Some people might feel joyed that the Saudi Arabian Sovereign Wealth Fund has done a huge amount of dough in this.
Just 15 weeks ago, it completed a huge investment, 1.1 billion francs, as part of a capital raising, and it's lost the lot. And a lot of that is down to its own behaviour in some ways, you know, the Saudi Arabian Central Bank, because they've essentially said that when asked a couple of weeks ago, would they continue to support CS First Boston, having just tipped in this enormous amount of money, they said, no, we won't. So that created a confidence crisis and a run on bank deposits. So everybody wanted it out. It was
What's caused this sudden fragility in banking markets?
Well, banking is the riskiest business that you can ever be involved in.
See, a lot of people hearing that statement would say, what are you talking about? How can you lose money being a bank?
Well, very easily.
Well, as we've seen. Yeah.
The very reason we have central banks in the world these days, and they're, you know, a relatively new phenomenon, you know, when you consider about the history of banking, the reason they were invented was to circumvent these kind of crises, right? So that when banks do go belly up, you've got a lender of last resort. And that was the primary function of central banks when they were first created, to have a lender of last resort when you've got a bank that goes under. You've got an overriding body there that says, we will lend you the money to ensure that you can maintain operations. What happens to your shareholders, what happens to your creditors is another matter, but we will ensure that the banking system as such is maintained. And look, one of the reasons that banks are such a risky proposition is because while they've got shareholder funds in there and they've got deposits which they are supposed to use to buy very safe investments and all the rest of it to back up those deposits, banks actually create most of the money that is in the system. And so their liabilities just dwarf the capital base that supports all of that. Now, when I say banks create money, you know, most people think that governments create the money or central banks create the money. That's just not the case.
Really?
No. Banks create the money. Every time a bank...
What do you mean a bank creates money?
I thought
the Reserve Bank printed money.
No. Well, they can. But there's about 90% of all money that's out there on issue is actually created by commercial banks.
Hang on. Banks can't print money?
Yeah, they can. Easily.
No, they can't.
Yeah. Yes, they do.
They can't print banknotes.
They don't. You don't have to print banknotes.
Because after all, hang on, this is where we're getting mixed up here, isn't it? Because the definition of money is not just physical money.
That's right.
No.
Most of it is electronic these days.
Yeah.
And, you know, every time a bank actually lends you money, right, they don't, you know, even in the old days, you know, if you went to borrow money from a bank, it would just be a ledger transfer.
Hang on. I put $10 in the bank.
Yep.
That means the bank's got $10 to lend, doesn't it?
So you give me that $10, I'm the bank.
Yes,
right?
Okay. So someone comes in the next day and says, I want to borrow $10.
And I give it out to them.
Okay, but what if someone comes in the following day and wants
to borrow... With that $10 that's just been spent.
No, they come in and say, I want to borrow $10 too. Well, hang on, the bank hasn't got $10 because it just lent that lot.
Yeah, but I can just lend you some more.
How can it do that? It hasn't got any.
It doesn't matter.
What the? Hang on, where do they get the money to lend you?
They don't have to get it. They just lend it out, right? So you think about it this way. You've given me the $10.
Hmm.
I lend that $10 out to, you know, somebody else. That $10 gets spent by that other person.
Hmm.
And somebody else has got the $10. They come in and give me the $10, right, to deposit. And I lend it out to somebody else. And they come in and give it back to me. And I'm creating an enormous book of loans based on the deposits that are coming in, but it's just the one $10 note, right?
So the rest of it's just book entries.
That's right.
So when I say I've lent $1 million out,
yeah,
it didn't mean I ever had $1 million. In fact, I don't have $1 million.
No. And this is the role of central banks.
This is how it's so shaky because after all, if suddenly a lot of people want their money back, I actually don't have enough money to give.
If everyone comes into the bank, if all depositors come into the bank at the same time and say, give me your money, give me my money, I don't have the money to give back to them.
Why isn't this the definition of a Ponzi scheme?
Because it's called banking.
So is banking a Ponzi scheme?
It is. It's the way it's always worked. And like most people think that the government creates, you know, here's $5 billion and that's what all we've got for the economy. Or the central bank says, here's the money we've printed and there you go and that's all there is. That's just not the case. The role of a central bank is not to create the money. It's to control the speed at which banks create the money. So when they jack up interest rates and I'm the bank, you know, less people want money, less people want to borrow money. Mm. So therefore, there's a less speed involved in me creating the money as the bank to send out to people. When central banks cut interest rates there's more demand for credit as a bank, which I am, I speed up the level of credit creation that I maintain. So that is the way it works. Governments override the system. Central banks really control it, but they control the speed at which the commercial banks create money. And that's why banking is the riskiest business that you could ever possibly have. It's also one of the most fundamental businesses that for the economy. It is the lifeblood of finance and the way the economy works. So, and it's why everything is on such a delicate, you know, really a little tightrope, really. And this is why we're experiencing the strains we're having now, because central banks have gone out there and decided inflation needs to be reined in. We need to just control it. And so they've jacked up interest rates at a pace that has never been seen before. And now suddenly we're starting to see the cracks. And, you know, they have to now decide, central banks globally now have to decide what's the most important imperative here. What do we need to control? Do we need to keep inflation under control? Or do we need to keep the global financial system intact? And this is the decision that is going to have to be made within the next few weeks.
Yeah, it's a big choice.
Well, you know, this week, tonight, in fact, we've got the US Central Bank, the Federal Reserve, sitting down to decide whether or not they're going to jack up interest rates again. Now, last week, the European Central Bank went, you know, they decided, bugger it, we're going to push up interest rates, but double whammy, 0.5 percentage points. And they did it, I think primarily because they didn't want to be seen to be in panic mode about what was going on with UBS and Credit Suisse. But the Federal Reserve tonight is going to have to decide what to do, whether they go ahead with an interest rate hike, knowing full well that if they do so, they're going to create a lot more strain on the system. And bear in mind, there's two things that the US Federal Reserve is doing in this regard in terms of money at the moment. They're jacking up interest rates at a rate we've never seen before, but they're also withdrawing liquidity from the system. They have been, at least, for quite a few months. So remember quantitative easing, money printing, back in the, in the pandemic and in the global financial crisis. For the past few months, they've been out there hoovering up that money out of the system. They've been draining liquidity from the system. Now, when Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank went under, they suddenly stopped that whole process and they reversed it and decided to pump money back into the financial system. So there's a lot of people out there in the money markets at the moment going, well, if you're going to reverse that, which is actually a really radical thing to do, are you also going to pause your interest rate hikes?
Yeah. Who loses money when a bank like the Credit Suisse goes bust? The investors in the bank.
Yeah.
If you had money in Credit Suisse, well, no, you haven't lost your money, have you? Because UBS have guaranteed those liabilities.
Yeah, that's right. So they just as
so the investors, basically the shareholders in the bank have lost money because the share price has collapsed.
That's right. And so you've had a couple of big investors, including the Saudi National Bank and Qatar, their national bank as well. They've also put a lot of money in. But the Saudis, particularly only 15 weeks ago, contributed 1.1 billion francs, which I think is about half a billion US dollars, into becoming the biggest shareholder in Credit Suisse. And they obviously thought they were buying in at the bottom of the market. You know, what could go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong?
Unfortunately, when asked a little over a week ago, you know, things aren't looking great. Are you going to put in more money to continue to prop it up? The Saudis said, no, we won't. And that contributed to the run on the bank, which then led to it all being basically pulled.
Just, I mean, as an exercise, if a bank does go bust, obviously if you've got money in that bank, you lose your money. What about if you owe the bank money? Do you walk away?
When you say if you've got money invested in the bank, well, if you've got money in the bank, if you're a depositor.
That's what I mean. If you've got a deposit, they've got a term deposit.
Well, no, and this is one of the really interesting things that's happened in the last couple of weeks. The Americans have stepped in and said, prior to what's happened just in the past fortnight, the Americans have said, if you've got $250,000 US in the bank, that deposit is guaranteed.
Right.
What they did last week was say, we're going to raise that. It doesn't matter how much you've got in there. If you've got money in the bank, it's guaranteed.
What about if you owe the bank money?
What are they going to do?
They're
going to come after you. I mean, they'll probably want the money back and you'll probably have to try and refinance. But
so whoever takes over the receiver.
But it's a really big step, though, to actually lift that guarantee from $250,000 to basically it doesn't matter how much money you've got in the bank.
Yeah.
In Australia, we've got a similar guarantee. $250,000 deposits are all guaranteed. We've now lifted the stakes. I think, you know, there's an implicit guarantee by governments and central banks that it doesn't matter how much money you've got deposited, you'll get your money back.
Hmm. Yes, it's a risky business.
Well, again, though, that is a whole that's trying to calm the situation down, try and ensure that, you know, there isn't going to be a run on banks, because you do not want depositors all clamoring and banging on the door saying, we want our money back now.
No. Yes, because that's the thing. Banks don't have any assets, do they?
No.
No.
Not really.
They actually don't. There actually aren't anything. They're just vapor, actually.
The liabilities easily outweigh the equity that's there. So that's why it is the riskiest business on earth, but it's also the business that is most fundamental to, you know, the health of an economy.
Castles in the air, made of air. Thanks, Ian.
Thanks, Bill.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.